going to take testimony on it, get that finished, and they're waiting on amendments for the bill, so we will have to wait until Wednesday before we can actually move that bill out of committee. But with that, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1088. Mr. Putman, you can start with a brief update, and then we'll get the sponsors of the bill up here.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this bill is similar to one that we passed out earlier, 3098. It basically deals with the facility on which mobile homes or floating homes are established. My understanding that this has gone through extensive review between both landlords and tenants. We knew, I knew last week that there would be amendments to this, or, and I also knew that there would be conflict amendments with 3098. And rather than attempting to get a set of amendments here and then have to do with conflicts later, I asked legislative counsel to deal with the conflicts between this and 3098 and the proposed amendments all in one pass. And I've just been handed the amendments that would be in 1088. I'll pass those out to you. These amendments, for the most part, clarify wording, bring it into conformity with 3098, although a lot of 3098 is being brought into conformity with this. As far as I can tell, one of the major changes here is it clarifies that if the utilities are interrupted, then it's nothing the landlord has any control over. For example, a power station blows up, then the landlord can't be held liable for failing to provide that utility if it's beyond his control. I see a couple of other things here having to do with non-compliance with programs for drug and alcohol rehabilitation, but I don't know the substance of those. And finally, there is a fiscal impact statement, which I believe I had in your packet, or at least I intended to have it in your packet.
Something I haven't seen a fiscal impact statement.
Okay. One of the things I forgot to tell you is that this doubles the tax on the manufactured dwellings to finance the ombudsman program and the Division of Housing and Community Services. And I apologize for that. It's a $426,000 cost, but this would bring in $510,000 of revenue. So as it appears that it's financed.
This bill did not go to Ways and Means on the Senate side, did it?
There's no evidence of that.
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
This moment. Okay. Do you have the information you need to find that?
I don't have that, but I can get it
quickly. Okay. Representative Morissette.
Well, you're talking about going from $3 to $6. Is,
yes.
Yeah.
This bill will have to go through Ways and Means, so when we move it, we will send it to Ways and Means, because even though the revenue impact will be more than the fiscal impact, they still have to make accommodations for that in the budget. So they have to know that it's there, otherwise they will never get into the ombudsman's budget. So we will send the bill from here to Ways and Means, unless the Speaker tells me otherwise, but I was instructed last week that no more surprises on the floor with fiscal statements. They will go through Ways and Means. So, now that we have that on the record, who wants to start? Emily and John, do you guys want to come up together? Valerie Harrington. John, we have your I think you did this, the who gets what document. If we could be as brief as possible and still let us know about the major topics or parts of the bill, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll do just that. My name is John Van Landingham. I'm a lawyer with a nonprofit in Lane County and Lane County Law and Advocacy. I represent low-income tenants. I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 1088A, and recognizing that, as the Chief Putnam indicated, there will be some amendments. This bill was drafted by a work group similar to the work group that drafted House Bill 3098 that you heard a month ago, and reported out unanimously. Had many of the same members, but some additional members, because this work group focused entirely on manufactured housing and floating home tenancies in facilities. And this bill is focused on that area of landlord tenant law. The other group and bill focused on general landlord tenant law. There is overlap between the two. The heart of this bill is the issue that we call termination and removal. You heard about that extensively in April when you heard about 3098. The solution to that termination removal issue is in both bills. As Keith indicated, part of our struggle with council checks is making sure that those supervisions are identical in both bills. That is the heart of 1088 and also in 3098. There are a couple of other issues that are addressed in 3098. That aims entirely at manufactured dwelling or floating home tenancies in facilities. A facility is four or more spaces, like a manufactured home park or a marina. And those are generally efforts to draft statutes similar to existing statutes, but designed expressly for manufactured home facility living. Different type of tenancy in that the tenant owns the home and rents the space. So expectations and requirements are somewhat different. And previously, statutes were not written with that in mind. So we've taken some base statutes, such as statute regulating a landlord's right of access, rewritten it just for facility living. Tenant duties, same thing. Landlord duties with regard to habitability, same thing. We've made some changes to abandoned property. We've also made some changes to make clear that ORS 90.505 to 90.840 just apply to facility tenants. That's a very quick run through. This handout, I didn't intend to be a piece of paper for you, but it's all I had on Friday to give to Keith. I've written a longer explanation, which will be ready on Wednesday, by Wednesday. If you get to a work session on this bill, it'll be something like 20 to 25 pages. This is a very short little summary that allows us as advocates to tell our members who got what. The VL in the title refers to my last name. It's absolutely arbitrary with me as a key. L in the document means landlord, obviously. T means tenant. RA means rental agreement. A and D refers to alcohol and drug-free housing. There are a couple of mistakes in that handout, if you care. If you don't care, I won't run through. That's the end of
the question. How serious are these mistakes?
Not that big a deal.
Okay, do you have that key anywhere in case that we can't figure out as far as the L's and the T's and the RA's?
I figured it out. I'm sure the committee can.
All right. Thank you very much, John. Is there any questions? Thank you very much. You will be available Wednesday?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll give the committee member a chance to look over this and the other information we get today. And if we have any questions, we'll ask you back up on Wednesday. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Will we? Will we have a chance to look at what you're going to give us before we come to this meeting on Wednesday?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, the longer explanation I wrote this weekend is being typed as we sit here. It will be faxed to three members of the work group who will review my work and make sure I've made no errors. Emily is one of those. A member from MHCO is another. And I will make corrections tomorrow. I could, if you want a copy Tuesday afternoon, I could fax it up to you.
Well, if you send that to me, Mr. Van Lanningham, I'll get it to the committee just as soon as you get it to me.
I would like to just Representative Morissette, don't rely on waiting on that too much because this bill will move on Wednesday. Don't want to hold it up, so try to get as much as you can out of the bill and out of this list of who got what. And if we get that by Tuesday afternoon, good, but we don't want to hold up the bill for that primary.
Mr. Chairman, just another thing, if you would phone me when you fax, I'll get the fax about an hour sooner than I would otherwise get it. And if I could, members of the committee, this one-page set of amendments and the longer document that Mr. Van Landingham referred to. It's my belief that this is 99.9% of what we will see Wednesday, if not in fact 100%.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Emily, you want?
For the record, I'm Emily Cedarleaf with Multifamily Housing Council, and for the newer members of this body, there are four landlords groups in the state. Multifamily Housing Council has approximately 4,500 members and approximately representing about 350,000 rental spaces. We deal with single-family, multifamily, and mobile home and floating home arenas. Back in 1981-83, we started the process of working together with the tenant advocates. At that time, it was Michael Marcus and myself. After then Representative Springer got mad at listening to us fight about landlord-tenant in front of a committee when the committee didn't have a clue what we were talking about. So at that point, we started a coalition, and at first it was just the residential side of this equation. Now we've added the component with the mobile home park equation, and it too has had its ups and downs. We have met for over almost 2 years this month and worked on the amendments. Some of them were difficult to arrive at. That's why the who gets what sheet, so that nobody felt that anybody's ox was being gored. The goal here is to give the best written language to those people who use landlord-tenant law. Usually, landlord-tenant law, when it lands up in court, there is no administrative rule to the process. Then it has to go to a judge who then has to interpret it, what the documents all say and what the statutes say. So we have tried our best to make it as landlord and tenant user-friendly, because most times there's not an attorney involved in the process. So sometimes it seems much more basic than other statutes that you see, but that's because of the process of how it's used. We think that this is a good and fair bill. There was lots of compromises this session about this, but we are here in support of that.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Sally?
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sally Harrington, and I'm legislative chair for the Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. We represent more than 500 parks in the state, and I'm also vice president of Commonwealth Property Management. We manage over 75 mobile home parks in the state of Oregon. Senate Bill 1088 is a coalition bill, as you've heard from Emily and John, of which we have spent several hours and days meeting on this bill to come to terms with the bill. Some of the issues in the bill are simply housekeeping issues. The biggest, I think at the heart of the bill, is what the residents refer to as forced removal. And to explain what that means is the current law allows a landlord to remove a home on a subsequent sale without having the opportunity to do any repairs or to be able to keep the home in the park. This bill allows the owner of the park to issue a notice for failure to maintain the home during the tenancy. The resident at that point has the opportunity to make the repairs and keep the home in the park and sell it at a later date if they so choose. Senate Bill 1088 allows any former resident who was evicted from the park to also sell their home in the park. Depending on what their eviction was for, the landlord reserves the right to not allow that person back in the home, in the park, after the eviction without written approval from the landlord. So if a resident was evicted for drug dealing or discharging a gun or whatever, he is not allowed back in the park to sell the home, but someone else can come in and do it for him. We support Senate Bill 1088, and we would appreciate your support in this bill also. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Jim Lawrence.
Good morning. I'm Jim Lawrence. My wife and I own two small mobile home parks in Clackamas County. Interestingly enough, both of them are senior status parks, that is, age 55 and over. As a result of that, we have a number of elderly people that reside in our parks. And at times, this creates a challenge in that there is a tendency on the part of some of them to really not pay attention to the appearance or the repairs of their home. And this bill concerns me in that I feel like I'm being set up to do something morally that I'm not comfortable with, and that is to have to hammer on elderly people who, at that stage in life, don't need this kind of aggravation. The tools that were available to us prior to this bill is that it's comfortable to advise tenants that if they aren't maintaining their homes to our standards, then it's incumbent upon us to try to get them to remove when they no longer are tenants. That tool is being taken away from us, and I am concerned about it. And it's also, I think, this bill's also setting us up to be bad actors. I'm fearful that in the future, people are going to be coming to these sessions and complaining about how hard those landlords are in dealing with maintenance and removal of homes. I hope that's not the case, but I have that gut feel that I'm kind of being set up. So in summary, I have to say I'm really concerned about this issue in the bill, and for that reason, I'm really not in support of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? Mr. Gardner.
You're saying that you feel you're being set up because you'd have to give them a list of those corrections? And then
There are going to be some landowners that are going to be aggressive with this. And, from what I'm reading here, this 30-day notice thing is something that can be used aggressively to have homes removed from parks. And, again, the scenario is I'm concerned about elderly tenants who, this 30-day issue, that's a very short time period when you start getting an old geezer like me. And it's a management problem that I'm concerned about in getting people to maintain their homes. And I'm afraid it's going to be a problem for us.
Thank you. Under the existing law, what's the scenario for asking a person to fix up their home or leave? How does this change the present?
Okay, as Sally mentioned, that we were talking about the way the system works now, mm-hmm. we have the opportunity to ask the home to be removed upon resale if it does not meet our expectations mm-hmm. for the standards of the park. Arbitrary, I understand, but I think most park owners are pretty conscientious about trying to maintain the appearance of parks. And when homes start to deteriorate and become an eyesore, that's kind of the issue that we're dealing with elderly people. How do we deal with elderly people? We go in there and hammer on them and make life uncomfortable for them to meet our expectations for the maintenance of the homes in the place. I don't like doing that.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much, Jim, for coming in today. Pat Schwartz, Sharon, you mean Barrett?
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Pat Schwartz, and I represent Manufactured Homeowners of Oregon. We are pleased to be able to be here to testify on behalf of this bill. As you've heard mentioned before, we literally spent about a year and a half of our lives, at least once a week, working on this bill and getting it honed down to where everybody could agree on it. It's a diverse group of people. We have landlords and residents, lenders, building codes. This whole thing was facilitated through Dave Shelar, who's our Oregon State Ombudsman and has the patience of Job. John Van Landingham has written draft after draft, and had I been him, I think I'd have gone home and sulked or died, because he'd just about get one of them ready and somebody would come in and we'd tweak something a little bit more. So it's been an experience, but we've come down to the place that we all agree. The big issue for us has been forced removal, and you've heard it talked about. We have property owners, landlords, who on the subsequent sale of a piece of property would insist that that home had to be removed. And while I'm hearing stories about they don't want to have to make people move their homes, in essence, when the landlord says to you as a purchaser that when you get ready to sell this home, it has to be removed from the park, you have devalued my home to the place that it's something like junk. So, and there's nothing in the new laws that says that this formerly very friendly landlord suddenly has to become an aggressor and tell you that if you're not going to get your house painted, you have to move. I haven't seen anything in here that takes care of that issue. We urge that you, the committee, pass this bill and get it to the floor and get it voted. The one thing that I'm concerned about, if I may, and that's this suddenly we're looking at this additional $3 for the ombudsman's office, which was something that, that the residents were truly in favor of. What happens if we get bogged down in that now?
I believe you're asking about the Ways and Means
yes.
process. I don't think there'll be a problem. It's just
okay.
The Ways and Means Committee has to know that this budget, this extra money needs to be in the budget. Otherwise,
okay.
they're liable to pass a budget and not include that $400,000 in it.
Okay.
Then this money would be coming in, and the ombudsman have no authority to spend it.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Hey, Chair Byer, thank you. Sharon Fleming Barrett, representing the Oregon Rental Housing Association, 3,500 rental owner managers throughout the state. We also participated in the drafting and the negotiating of Senate Bill 1088. You've heard a lot about, quote, forced removal, end quote. I don't like that term. I think that the term is misleading. I'm not talking about forcing somebody to remove their home from a facility, just the opposite. We did a very fine line walk on property owner rights. We balanced the property owner of the facility's rights and the homeowner's rights when we drafted this section of the law. We are not trying to force removal, just the opposite. We are trying to stop forced removal for unjust causes, and that's what the majority of fighting over this bill has been about. The people who come and oppose this bill, I do not believe to date understand what it is we've tried to do here. We have not stopped them from removing somebody's manufactured dwelling from their facility if it's deteriorated or dangerous to the neighbors. That's still in the law. It's not a change other than it's now clear once and for all that you can do that. I believe this bill gives facility owners and homeowners a much clearer vision of what their relationship should be. I do not believe it forces anybody to take action against the elderly or anyone else. I think we worked very hard on this bill, and I think that we've created a wonderful product. I urge your support of Senate Bill 1088 on behalf of the rental housing industry, both landlords and tenants. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Don Miner and Joe Brewer.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association to speak in favor of this legislation. Our association represents manufacturers, retailers, lenders, developers, transporters, et cetera, that supply manufactured housing. We don't generally represent landlord interests, but we do believe that we have a large interest in this matter, particularly the forced removal or forced retention or whatever you want to call it. Our association for the last several years has been hearing complaints from consumers as well as lenders who are discovering that a home is going to have to be removed from a park and that it can't be sold. The circumstance comes up, well, I'll describe the circumstance. A person puts a new home in a park, or he buys a home that's in an existing park, and at that time there isn't a problem. He has an unfettered right to sell the home, or he can't be forced to remove it if he sells it. At the time he goes to sell the home, he goes to the landlord and informs him the home will be sold. At that time, the landlord, in the current law, appears to have the option of telling that consumer, that resident, that while he can sell the home, the purchaser of that home can't sell the home to a person who intends to leave it in the park. Nobody will buy the home. Or if somebody will buy the home, they buy it at a steep discount. Now, the resident can just live in the home forever, but that usually isn't one of the options. Folks sell homes because they want to move up. They want to trade into a better home. They have a job elsewhere and have to move. They're elderly and need to change their lifestyle, so they're over a barrel. In many cases, when they can't find a buyer for the home, they abandon the home, which impacts our members, the lenders who have mortgages on those homes, because that mortgage now isn't worth very much. Collateral can't be sold where it is. If it can be moved and placed in another location, it's going to be at a steep, steep discount. Consumer's going to also lose his equity in his home at that point, or at least have it steeply discounted. And there's really no way to protect yourself from this situation under current law. Consumer can't protect himself. The lender can't protect himself. I mean, looking for solutions, one was to say that, well, the current circumstance doesn't work for us at all, where it's just random or somewhat arbitrary as to who will be forced to remove the home and who won't. One of the ideas was to protect homes newer than a certain date. Lenders told us, you tell us what that date is, and we will tell you which homes we'll finance. It has a lot of unintended consequences. So that didn't work for us. I think that the issue of disrepair is the proper place to draw the line, that those homes that are in a severe state of disrepair and can't be fixed are the ones that should be removed. Under this law, the consumer will be given a notice that he has to repair his home. If he doesn't, the home can be removed. If he removes it, that's the end of the story. If he abandons the home, any lender who is a lien holder on that house can step in and make the repairs. We think that this bill, with this language, will provide protection to consumers. At the same time, it'll help us maintain our housing stock, and so we support it. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Joe Brewer, I'm the administrator of the Building Codes Division. The division oversees the construction and maintenance of manufactured dwelling parks, so we have an interest in this bill. We participated in the coalition that brings the bill to you and respectfully request your support for the bill. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Is anyone here who did not get a chance to sign up to testify on Senate Bill 1088? Seeing no one, will close the hearing. Yes, this bill will be up on Wednesday's agenda for a work session. We have a conflict amendment, so we have to wait to get out of the council before we can move the bill. And at that time, we will send the bill to Ways and Means unless the speaker doesn't have to. So we will now.
Chair.
President Thompson.
I've spent some time working on this over the last 6 years. I never thought I'd see this day we'd get agreement to get a bill this far. So I hope the conflict amendments are not anything very extreme.
No. You have a summary of those in your packet. And simply the main conflict is the fact that we put a lot of this issue into 3098, also the bill we passed in this committee last month, as the same issue in it, and we want to make sure the two are the same as they move to the governor's desk so that one doesn't cancel the other one out.
Okay,
let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 842. Mr. Putman.
Mr. Chairman, this bill creates a limited insurance license for car rental companies. It allows basically the owner of the business to obtain this limited license. It also requires training and other kind of factors that you would expect to see in the regulation of other insurance sales.
Insurance and building codes. Jim Gardner and Al Elton, you're here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner. I'm appearing today for Avis Hertz Budget Enterprise and Auto Nation, which is the owner of National Car Rental. This bill was introduced at our request, and in conjunction with Catrala, which is represented by Mr. Al Elkins, who is to my right. As Keith Putnam mentioned, it would create limited insurance licenses for car rental companies and would require such licenses if companies sell insurance for rented vehicles. Neither car rental companies nor their employees are currently licensed to sell insurance in Oregon, and if you've rented a car at the airport, you often will see you have a little deal where you can check off if you need insurance. Well, technically, that is the transaction of insurance, and technically, the salespeople there are acting as insurance agents. The problem is they're not licensed and they're not regulated. So what we did was went with the insurance division, worked out an arrangement whereby we could do corporate licensing, which takes the hassle off of the insurance division of taking individually each of those agents and licensing them. We're responsible for doing that. We're responsible for training them, and if something goes wrong, they look to us for that. So we've also worked with Lana Butterfield and Jack Monroe on the agent community and the insurance division, as we said. And to our knowledge, there's no opposition to the bill.
Questions? Mr. Thompson? Any questions?
No. I'm fine, Mr. Chair. Al Elkins with Catrala. I'm just here to answer any questions anybody might have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 842? See no one will close the public hearing or session.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 842A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Gardner moves Senate Bill 842A and Gross to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Atkins?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Knopf?
Aye.
Representative Lundquist?
Aye.
Representative
Marcez? Aye. Excuse.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Aye.
Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 842 moves forward the pass recommendation. Representative Morissette, would you care to vote on the bill before I close the vote? Senate Bill 842.
It's a good one. A good bill should pass.
Aye. Votes aye.
And I won't carry it.
Representative Atkinson, we'll start on your side today. How's that sound?
We're back to A's already.
You know, we never get to B's.
Representative Gardner is
sure. No, I'm fine.
Representative Gardner will be the carry.
Love to carry it.
And whine a little bit.
Bring in the lamb. Okay.
I mean, something else is coming my way.
We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 907. Hey, Mr. Putnam.
Mr. Chairman, if you turn in a car as a down payment on a new car, but you in fact still owe money on the old car, that money is often just added to the loan on the new car. So if I bought a car for $20,000 and I still owed $5,000 on my own, my loan would be $25,000. It's oversimplified, but roughly is right. This deals with that issue and provides a mechanism to allow the contracts to deal with it in a straightforward manner and to avoid the possibility of having to write two separate loans.
Fuller.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Fuller. I represent the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. Mr. Putman is essentially correct. We would add the negative equity of a traded-in vehicle on top of a loan if there's negative equity. And the important thing is if you've got a vehicle you're trading in that's worth $5,000 and you owe $6,000 on the loan, then you have $1,000 worth of negative equity. Obviously, if you're trading in a vehicle and the vehicle is worth more money than what you owe on it, then you would have a positive equity. So this only takes place in occasions where you owe more money on a vehicle than its trade-in value, and that trade-in negative equity is added to the loan. That's currently done today. It's been done for years, but there was a ruling that came out of the Federal Reserve Board in October of last year that caused some of the national lending companies to be concerned unless there was specific statutory authority in each state to allow them to finance that negative equity as part of the deal. So states that don't have that specific language in statute are being asked to add that specific authority. The Department of Justice, the Consumer Protection Division of the Department of Justice, worked closely with Ford Motor Company, their financing division, in crafting the language that you have before you. And the Department of Justice testified on the Senate side that they had no opposition to the bill, and in their absence today, I would assume that they continue to have no opposition to the bill. I would draw your attention to one error in my written testimony, and as most of you probably know, as we change the testimony from the House to the Senate side, we make as few changes as possible to our written comments, and I failed to change Chairman Shannon to Chairman Beyer, and that was an oversight on my part, and I apologize. The rest of the testimony is accurate. The bill is in good shape. I was notified late on Friday that I may want an amendment to the bill on a different issue with a same relating clause as we get closer and closer to sine die. And so I have asked the chair to hold the work session on the bill till next Wednesday to determine whether the amendment is needed and has support for the committee. So with the chair's continued permission, I'll come back on Wednesday and either say good bill should pass or recommend to you an adoption of an additional amendment. And with that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 907? In total, we'll close the public hearing. And as Laura said, we'll step the bill over for a work session on Wednesday. And that's since we have three co-sponsors who are members of the committee, these three can fight about who's going to carry it until Wednesday. How's that sound?
And you're not one of them, right?
That sounds... Chairman Shannon, I was going to volunteer for that, Darrell.
Like you're a pack of all.
Yeah, we have many bills left in our calendar.
Designated bill carrier.
All right.
That's now 30 that are on the floor out of this committee.
There's Senate bills on the floor yet to be done.
There's 30 of them to be done?
From this committee.
I'm curious, this is real irrelevant to this, but how many bills have we passed out of this committee? We've got to have, I mean, it's one of the larger workloads in the whole legislature.
I've won Twinkies and bottles of pop and various things for the most bills out of committee.
So. And I might add, he hasn't shared those with the committee members.
That's true.
President Thompson, uh-oh. Mr. Thompson does have information of the numbers if he's curious.
I'd just be curious because I mean, it seems like we, every day I go down and pick up the schedule, it looks like most of the legislature comes through this committee.
We're blessed. All right, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1055.
I guess plus one word you used.
Mr. Putman.
Once you understand what a tide house is, this bill isn't hard to understand. A tide house has to do with a business that sells alcoholic liquor on a retail basis where there's some ownership to the producer of that alcoholic beverage. Oregon liquor laws currently deal with that issue and are enforced very, very strictly. A situation has occurred recently where that generates this bill, and that is to continue to prohibit the direct ownership of a retail establishment by a manufacturer. When that manufacturer is owned by a parent corporation that is not itself directly involved in producing alcohol, consumable alcohol, then people on that board of directors could have an ownership interest in the retail establishment.
Gordy.
Good morning, Chair, Fire, members of the committee. Brian Doherty, representing the Western States Petroleum Association. And if you see on your Senate bill, the company that I am representing before you today is Equilon Enterprises, which probably none of you know who this is. But it's the downstream retail operation merger of Texaco and Shell oil companies. And they have... have you seen some of the mergers that have occurred in other industries? This is similar. Just in their service station operations, they have merged. As such, they have a new corporate identity, Equilon. Equilon now needs to take over the retail liquor licenses of the convenience stores at Texaco, Star Mart stations. And you've seen these Star Marts throughout attached to the service stations. However, Oregon's Tidehouse Law has, that's back from right after the Prohibition, has these prohibitions against having a manufacturer of alcoholic beverage have an ownership interest in a retail operation, simply to separate someone like Miller Brewing from owning the retail establishments and then prohibiting any other liquor in there, or Seagram's or something like this. What's, it's been taken to another extent in that they say you cannot have common board of directors of the retail establishment or its company or the and the manufacturer. What we have here is an outside board of director, a woman on the Shell Oil Company, the parent company, of one of the parent companies of Equilon, is also on the, an outside board of director of Anheuser-Busch Corporation. Again, a parent company of Budweiser that is producing beer. So we have a very technical violation. We've worked with OLCC to see if we could solve it by administrative rule. They indicated it would be best for us to do this. What we have is a very narrow amendment to ORS 471.396. It is the eighth such amendment because since the prohibition, there's been lots of situations which I don't think they anticipated. And that simply says that a person can be a director of the parent company of a manufacturer of alcohol and a parent company of the retailer, so long as, and we put several conditions in that met the requirements of the beer and wine distributors, of the wholesale malt and wine business, and the OLCC. And we had full support. We passed it out of the Senate, 26-0. It is, I think, something that simply allows Equilon to be put back in the place of where Texaco is at this time in terms of having the retail license. I'd be glad to answer any questions if you'd like.
Mr. Chair.
President Thompson.
I understand this, and I've never run into this before, but how do the microbreweries, which own their own retail outlets, not get affected with this?
I would suggest that the OLCC could answer that better than I could. I know the microbreweries, there is a clause that I've used here. They sell primarily through their own establishments, and if they sell outside of their location, on-premises location, it goes through beer and wine distributors, although I think they can have some exemption to do a limited amount of distributing.
Mr. Doherty, on that order, you have a very attractive relating clause. You swear the dash A2 amendments to this bill?
Well, I'd heard about these dash 2 amendments, Chair Beyer. Thank you for reminding me. It created a lot of excitement in the Capitol Halls last week. I was hoping they might not show up again today, as this is such a nice, friendly bill so far. But stranger things have happened in this Capitol.
Don't worry, that issue's been taken care of.
It seemed like a small one when it was just Equilon. They didn't know who Equilon was at first. But, yeah, I think we've tried to work cooperatively to help that person find another bill.
As you told me in a private conversation, next time you ask for a bill, you will not have it relating to alcoholic beverages.
Yeah, a bit broad and sweeping it was.
Any other discussion? Resident Thompson, there is another bill, or another amendment being put into another bill to allow small microbreweries to self-distribute up to a certain number of barrels their own bill, or their own beer. So that was the amendment that was offered for this bill, and Mr. Doherty worked with other sponsors of other bills and found another vehicle that can be put in by itself.
Well, I was going to ask that question, but why are they, if that is the existing law, if the existing law says they can't do it, why have they been able to do it over the last number of years as well?
They have not been able to do it, and that's the issue. The new law will allow them to.
Okay, they can sell it on site, but they can't sell through a distributor.
They can sell through a distributor, but they have to go through a distributor. And the new law will allow them to self-distribute.
I see. Okay.
A certain limited number of barrels per year. I think the number they came up with was 250 or something like that, barrels per year.
Hmm. 500.
$500?
That's what I'm hearing from the back of the room there.
Okay. A limited amount, so that's, yeah.
Okay.
That's the issue that was attached to the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Thompson.
Rogue Brewing is in my district. It's the
my brewery, by the way.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I was worried about them and their relationship to this bill. So if you wouldn't mind telling me which bill you once someone to notify my office which bill they do use and how it affects, and so I give them a chance to make any comments on a bill like that, I'd appreciate it.
Your friend Mr. Bill Perry has been working the issue.
I'll still try to take care of things myself.
I'd also like that information because there are a number in my district, one specifically, that does have a distributor, and I would really like a heads up on this if we could.
Perhaps Mr. Putman could get the information for us and he can distribute it out in the offices.
Thank you.
Is there anything else, Mr. Dory?
No, unless there's any other questions. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
I think we better move this quick forward.
Let's make it 31 on the floor.
We'll close the. Did anyone else want to testify on the bill? We'll close the public hearing. Open the session on Senate Bill 1055. Representative Thompson.
Yes, I'd like to move Senate Bill 1055. Is that A. Engross?
Yes, we have.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thompson, move Senate Bill 1055 A. Engross to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Call the roll.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Knopf?
Aye.
Representative
Lundquist? Aye. Representative
Morissette?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Atkinson?
Aye.
Chair Byer?
Aye. Having the required number of votes, Senate Bill 1055A moves the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm sure Representative Atkinson wants to carry
I'd love to. I think it's so. I don't know. It's the irony, though, of Anheuser-Busch and Shell Oil Company being together in that era of trying to fight drunken driving is
more than happy to hear that.
Yeah, I got a cool, good question here for you.
Great. Okay, we'll now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1306. Mr. Pop.
Mr. Chairman, my reading of this bill is that it gets some rather convoluted language into English, and in addition to that, it provides businesses that have a consumer finance license to relinquish that license if they're not actually making consumer loans. And then it also gives the regulator authority over businesses who, even though are not licensed, should be. This lets them get at the people who are violating the law, and they apparently cannot do that now.
Okay. Mr. Kruger?
Good morning, Chair. My name for the record is James Kruger. I'm the program manager for the Consumer Finance, which is housed within the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities in the Department of Consumer and Business Services. This bill makes three changes that will make life easier for the industry that we regulate. The first change being elimination of a convenience and advantage provision. Currently, applicants are required to file with us a rather lengthy report that includes demographic information and indicates to us that, in fact, they're conducting business in that area would be to the convenience and advantage of the community. That essentially puts the department in the position of making decisions that the marketplace ought to be doing, and we believe that the marketplace is capable of doing that without our assistance, so we're asking that that be removed. The second amendment will change a provision that requires that a licensee that moves their license from one city into another city cannot do that. They have to make a whole new application. In urban areas, that doesn't make much sense. You could move two blocks down the road and you end up making a new application with a 30-day posting period. So we're asking for that to be eliminated. The third amendment requires, or would give the director authority to amend the date upon which a annual report is filed. Currently, it is right in the middle of the tax season. Most people don't have their financial statements done. There is a penalty if you're late. We typically assess a fair number of penalties because of the burden trying to get the report out during the tax season. So we would work with the industry to find a date that made more sense. The last thing that the bill does is it gives us authority over people who are conducting the business but do not have the license. And currently we have a number of payday loan companies that are conducting the business without the license. We've had incidents in the past where we've asked them to look at their books to indicate, to get the evidence that they've actually done the business, and they've just said, no, you don't have authority because the law restricts you to licensees. This amendment was offered by Representative Mannix in the other chamber. It was passed. The bill, as amended, was passed 25-0 in the other chamber. With that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Mr. Kruger, I see in your testimony you say you've included a section-by-section analysis of Senate Bill 284. I assume you mean Senate Bill 1306.
If I, in fact, gave you 284, I will make sure that you get 284.
You gave 1306, but your written testimony says 284.
I apologize.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. I don't think anyone else in the room wants to testify. Senate Bill 1306 and open work session of Senate Bill 1306.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morissette.
I would move Senate Bill 1306 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Morissette moves Senate Bill 284 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Nope.
1306. Representative Morissette moves Senate Bill 1306 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Mr. Kruger even got me thinking 284. Members, for those who don't know the connection between the two, Senate Bill 284 was a much larger bill within the Senate Business and Consumer Affairs Committee that dealing with payday loans and title loans. That bill did not move, and there were four provisions of that bill that were very important in order to regulate these businesses. So they took those four provisions and put them into this bill, which is 1306, added a fifth provision, which is the issue about requiring payday loan people to be licensed, and that's why we have Senate Bill 1306 in front of us. Any further discussion on the motion to move the bill to the floor? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Cano?
Aye.
Representative Lundquist?
Aye.
Representative Morissette?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Atkinson?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Chair Byer?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 1306 moves the floor with a due pass recommendation. I always wondered how the carrier was going to vote down there.
I'd like to hear it.
President Morissette would like to carry the bill.
It's a good bill.
We'll close the work session. Members, we have about eight bills on our schedule for Wednesday. Two that we had today that will come back for a final action in the work session, and there's six or seven others, something like that. And it is anticipated that Wednesday will be our last committee meeting. So after that, your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays will be in the mornings. Anyway, we will be free. So, no further business for the committee. We will adjourn.